The Gym Shorts podcast series. I'm your host, Kathy Smith.
Hello, and welcome to the Gym Shorts podcast, a kid-centered podcast series focused on raising healthy kids. As September wrapped up National Suicide Prevention Month, we really want to continue that conversation and keep it going. Today, we are meeting with licensed social worker and therapist, Erica Koopmans, to talk about recognizing signs and symptoms of teenage suicide and how we can intervene. Erica, hello. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for talking about this.
Yeah. This topic is one of our hardest to address, but it continues to be so necessary. In 2021, teen suicide was the second leading killer of kids ages 10 to 14 and age 15 to 24, second only to unintentional injuries, mostly from gun violence. This is such a big topic, Erica. Where do we even start?
It is a big topic. I think starting is talking about it like we're doing here. I heard it compared one time to the number of suicides in a year. In 2022, there were over 49,000 suicides in the United States.
For kids?
No, total.
Oh,
for
altogether. Okay.
Teens and adults, yeah. Mm-hmm. So just that number, just talking about suicide in general. What do we do? Where do we start? Yeah. If that was per day, it would be around 135 people a day. Hmm. If you compare that to that many people on a plane crash, and there was a plane crash today with 135 people dead, you'd hear about it on the news. And then tomorrow, the same thing happened again. You'd hear about it on the news and the next day. And then people would be saying, well, let's do something about this. What's going on with these plane crashes, right? Like if it was that number and you're comparing it. So I really think an important piece of it is we have to talk about it. People don't talk about suicide and they don't, and it's a heavy topic. You don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes in my area where I hear about it and I talk about it, I forget sometimes that it's so quiet in other places outside of my office, outside of my field, my career, it's not talked about. So I think that's an important piece of it. I think knowing some resources, which that's always a place to be prepared, not being afraid to ask the questions, that's kind of a piece of things we can talk about too, is how to just ask the question if somebody's feeling suicidal, if your kid, your teen, friend, whatever it is, being able to ask that question and kind of know what to do with it.
I mean, those numbers are staggering, Erica. And what a good way to look at it by comparing it to if that many people, you know, are dying in a plane crash every day, of course people would be like, we've got to stop this. But just really, really sad. Those numbers are staggering. And I do think we need to do something about it. Erica, are mental health conditions precursors to suicidal thoughts, or in particular with teens, what things in teens' lives are major stressors that might lead to these really sad thoughts?
Yeah, I think definitely the mental health piece with some specific diagnoses that can lead to that. I think depression is obviously a major precursor and connected to people with suicidal thoughts, people mm-hmm. who have had suicide attempts. There was one statistic I was reading that 57% of near suicides in children and adolescents have major depression as a diagnosis. So I think just talking about depression in general, as being a common precursor to suicidal thoughts or suicidal intent, suicidal attempts, all of that. Ages 12 to 18 has a 6 to 8% of major depression as a diagnosis. I think there's a lot of undiagnosed depression also. Sometimes, ADHD symptoms can overlap. There's a higher diagnosis of ADHD right now, but I think those symptoms sometimes can overlap with a lot of other things, with depression, anxiety. It can kind of look the same. It can appear to be similar, I guess.
I have a question too. When you bring up the topic of anxiety, my focus is educational psychology. So we had to learn a little bit about mental health, but is anxiety the same thing as depression, or is it comorbid with depression? Or what's the differences between them?
Yeah, those can also sometimes symptoms, how it expresses itself can be similar and they can overlap, but they are different and they can be totally not connected, unrelated to totally separate diagnoses.
Okay. Interesting. Do you feel
Yeah.
like there's anxiety can also be a precursor for suicide or?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mentioned depression as kind of the most common one, but I think there's a lot of other
A
mental
lot of
health
other ones as well. Okay.
can come with.
So, Erica, in a recent Mental Health Matters podcast, Understanding and Preventing Youth Suicide by the National Institute of Mental Health, Dr. Ariel Scheftel, an associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the U of Rochester Medical Center, said that risks can come from anywhere. What are some of the risks that parents and caregivers need to be aware of or looking for, with their teenagers or their kids?
Sometimes, so some risks, I think when you think about like risks with suicide, it can be more like the mental health diagnosis. It can be drug and alcohol use can increase risk of suicide in teens and adults. So looking for those kind of behaviors, the diagnoses. But other sort of things to look for, I guess, also would be those changes in behavior. Maybe a sudden drop in academic performance, a sudden like the effect of like rejection from somebody, from friends, social changes, more isolation from your teen or kid that you're seeing.
What if they're like, they come home from school and they go upstairs or their bedroom or whatever, and then they shut the door? Is that typical teenage behavior? I mean, is that, do
Yeah,
parents
sometimes
want to?
that can be, so that's where not isolating one individual behavior, because sometimes that can be a totally normal, age normative, developmentally
Sure.
normal behavior for a teenager to feel a little bit more isolated, a little bit more to themselves. But when it seems like a sudden change in that, or it's a little bit more increased or withdrawing from other people too, for teenagers, that's normal for them to find more of their identity in their peers. And so they're going to be spending more time with friends or other people, or just, maybe a little bit more distant from family. But when it's a change in that and you see a sudden change, or, if you've checked in on that normal isolation that feels like it's what they do every day after school. But I think, again, always asking the question, if you're wondering, is this normal or is this, what is this? I think coming out and just talking about those things with your teen is important.
What if the parents have like their kids don't want to talk to them or they don't, how do you get around that part? Because sometimes kids just are like one word answers or I'm fine or things like that. Are there ways that you can encourage that communication?
Yeah, I think if it's to a point where you're worried about depression symptoms or, mental health, I think not being afraid to just start the conversation about getting into a therapist or seeing somebody, if it's beyond that sort of age normative behavior of just isolating some. So seeking mental health treatment if you feel like it's at that point. I think a big piece of it too is knowing that it sometimes might mean that you take them out of school for an hour to go to therapy or something like that. I know parents have the hardest time seeing, oh, but we need after school hours, or we need evening, or I can't take them out of school. If their mental health is struggling, their academic performance is going to struggle. And so they're not going to be, it needs to be taken care of also, I guess. So.
That's a good point. Another question in regards to that. So communication sometimes at that level is hard anyways because of that age group, but starting the conversation is important. How do people broach the suicide part of a conversation? Like, let's say you have someone that doesn't want to talk much anyways, societal, how do you bridge that gap or as a parent or caregiver? Are there things that they could say that are kind of not necessarily dancing around it, but not just going from 0 to 100.
Yeah. That part definitely feels not natural. It feels uncomfortable. But what the research out there shows is that being direct and just saying the words and asking the question is what is the best approach. And so finding a way, it might not just be, how was your day today? Are you having suicidal thoughts? So it might, you might find a different way to do it, but overall, finding a way to just ask the question is the most important piece. And what I've seen in my office too is asking that question. A lot of times, teenagers or anybody, they're just waiting for someone to ask the question because you're taking away those hard words for them. If you say, hey, have you been thinking about hurting yourself, or do you have thoughts of suicide, or finding a more direct way to ask that question, you're allowing them to be able to just say yes or no, which is much easier than saying yes is much easier than finding a way to go tell somebody, I've been having these thoughts and I don't know what to do. So as uncomfortable it might be for you to say that to your teenager, it's you're doing them help. And then if they're not, you've done what you can as far as asking that question. If you still feel like something doesn't feel right and I want to get them into therapy, or I want to, continue to ask that question. But a lot of people are honest and say yes when they are, because they might be waiting for that question to be asked.
Good point. I appreciate it because sometimes those are hard questions and those are hard things to say, especially as a parent. You're afraid of the answer, maybe. I mean, have you ever talked to parents before who were so afraid of a possibility that they just didn't want to deal with it, or?
Or parents that look, I asked that question as a part of an intake with a teen for therapy, and for an intake, a parent needs to be present. And we ask that, and a teenager comes right out and says, yeah, I have been thinking about that. And the parents are just had no idea, but the kid is just so open right there because somebody asked the question, or they know that they're finally in the place where they're getting help and it's okay to just say that. I always tell them too that if it's we're going to talk about it one-on-one, it's not just during an assessment with their parents there, but it's something that we would involve parents in anyway. So there's a pretty well-known story out there from a Kev, his name is Kevin Hines, and he survived a suicide attempt jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. And if you Googled his name and that story, he does a lot of speaking events now, and he's got his story out there on a lot of platforms. Because what he found, he was waiting. Part of his story was that day he was waiting for someone to just show him some kindness or ask him that question. And he had decided he was going to go to the Golden Gate Bridge, which is a common, there's high rates of suicide of people jumping off that bridge. And he went through the whole morning, the bus ride there to the bridge, and then somebody on the bridge he thought was going to talk to him, and they just needed their picture taken. And so then he jumped. And he instantly regretted it, which then his speaking events and his sharing is to share with people who might be suicidal that it's an instant regret. But he survived. He was able to like maneuver his body in a way that he wouldn't die when he hit the water. He was praying he wouldn't die, and he didn't. And he was rescued. And so now he shares that story that was an instant regret. But the piece of the story also, I think that's important, is that he was just wanting someone to ask him. And he was just wanting someone to show some kindness or talk to him, or he was just, in such a low place. And his dad that day was trying to get him to come to work with him, just kind of knew something didn't seem right. But
Wow.
just, asking that question, being more direct and just asking somebody, sometimes I might find a way in my office to say it where you're being direct, but a little bit gentle of saying like, wow, with all of this going on right now, do you ever struggle with thoughts of suicide, or do you ever feel like you wish you weren't alive? Being direct, I think finding ways to ask the question, being direct without saying like, please don't tell me that you're thinking about suicide, because then that's taking the permission away from somebody. You're taking that, so kind of
Yeah.
can feel hard to figure out the right words, but just when in doubt, be direct and have some resources ready. I think that's another piece of things that's important, is just knowing resources, local and national resources.
I was talking to someone the other day, and they said their worried about someone that was considering, maybe thinking about that, but there was drugs and alcohol or something mixed up, and they wanted to know, when they should talk to that person, and maybe they'd get around to it next week or something. And like you're saying, you shouldn't wait to ask people either, right? Like you just, if you think something's going wrong or there is something that's out there, I'm guessing, just like the kid said, hey, I just wanted someone to be kind to me, or wanted someone to ask me the question. So as hard as this situation is and the subject is, I think your words are very wise. So Erica, in your practice, have you worked with any kids who have been suicidal?
I have adult, I guess I'm thinking adults and kids, but I do have a couple more recent situations I'm thinking of with teenagers. Sometimes, like I said, sometimes the parents know when they bring them in, and that's why they're bringing them in. They've realized, oh, this is serious, important, what they're going through, and we need to find somebody for them to talk to. Sometimes it comes up in the intake where they share that, or they say they have in the, a lot of times people will say we have in the past, but not currently having thoughts, and so that's something we want to work on too.
One of the fears that I think sometimes people have is, well, what if my child says yes, they are thinking about that? What, as a therapist, what would you recommend then what do we do from here? Where do we go?
Yeah, I think to know that, to take away some of that fear of what if they say yes and I don't know what to do, or what, you don't have to be the one that solves everything and figures it all out. It's that initial step of, okay, they've shared that. Yes, it's awful and scary, but now we can take them somewhere to get them help. And so that's where knowing the resources, knowing the local hospitals that might have an adolescent inpatient program where they can just at least be assessed to see if they need to stay for inpatient. There's national resources like the 988 hotline. So even if, as the adult, the parent that you're calling and saying, where do I take them? What do I do next? What, there's a, the hotline has a website as well. So the 988lifeline.org is the website for the 988 hotline. But just know, I guess, taking away that fear of they've told me yes, that's the hard part of yes, that they're having those thoughts. Maybe asking a little bit about, is it something that you have a plan for, you're going to act on, you have the intent or means to act. But again, those are all also things that you don't have to, you're not alone. You don't have to do all the work. There's a lot of people out there that are ready to help you. And so knowing where to go, what to do, I don't have to fix it all right now.
That's
Taking the
awesome.
time.
And that's really helpful advice too, because I think that might be another fear that parents have is, first of all, they're afraid to talk about it. But second of all, what if the answer is yes? And then what? And now I have to, now I'm freaked out because my child is, and also sad because my child is so sad. And how can I thought I could fix everything. I'm their parent, or I'm their caregiver, or I thought I should have seen this, or so yeah, that's helpful. Are there things that I haven't asked you yet, Erica, that you want people to know about teens and thoughts of suicide?
I think just knowing that it's not permanent, helping someone see that they're going to feel better. It's not permanent, where they're at right now. To just try to take some of that stigma away of suicide, of the word suicide, of feeling, like we can't talk about it. I think it just needs to be talked about.
What about in there is one question. In the book, The Body Keeps the Score, they mentioned that trauma or some exposure to an overwhelming life event can break down their sense of emotional security. Do we know about traumatic events being triggers for kids at all? Or do we know? I know it's hard because everything can be a trigger, but are there any things that if a teacher knows a student had a sudden death in the family last summer, or things that might make the teacher be a little extra careful in watching out for those kids? Are there any, are traumatic events triggers, or what kind of triggers, like socioeconomic status or home life situations? Are there triggers like that that we know about that people should just kind of be extra careful around or be more sensitive to?
I think just knowing in general that PTSD is another diagnosis that can be a precursor to suicidal thoughts, knowing that's another area of mental health that just is kind of in that same general area, that there's it's a mental health diagnosis that can lead to suicidal thoughts, just like a lot of other areas though. So knowing that, but if it's, I guess if you know like, hey, they've had some trauma in their life, but they've been seeing someone for treatment. They've been kind of, I think that's where there's a difference or in risk and in as far as so you might want to think about that or watch that person or look for those, looking for some the same sort of change in behaviors, those sort of clues that we can sometimes try to look for also with someone like that that you would do with anybody else too.
Any other things that we can be as supportive people in their lives? Are there things that we can do to help? Any recommendations on your therapist level for that?
What you're doing here is getting the word out and talking about it, not being afraid to talk about it, is one thing. Talking about it with other people. Again, just kind of going back to knowing the resources, know your local resources, especially for if even if it means you start with a school counselor, you start somewhere, you start, I've had people where they've gotten referred through their school, but it was suicidal thoughts. They shared suicidal ideation with their parents. Parents went to the school counselor somewhere where they know the resources. So you don't feel also like, I'm not saying you have to have like a book of every local resource and every place you would go ready when it's not, that's not the level of preparedness every parent needs to have, but just knowing where their first step might be if they did ask that question and it was a yes to that answer. Has, you don't have to be an expert in suicide and what to look for, and always asking. That doesn't mean go home and ask the, everybody you know the question of, "Are you thinking about suicide?" But just knowing, okay, if I'm, if something's going on in somebody's life, and I know they've had this just recently happen, or they're sharing that they're struggling with this, or I'm seeing those changes in behaviors, some risks, some drug and alcohol use, things like that, it'd be okay to ask that question, and I can be prepared and know what to do with that.
I just want to say thank you, Erica, so much for meeting with me again. You are just a wonderful resource and have such great ideas for people, and you're really easy to talk to. So I think that's good for people to see too, because therapists don't have to be scary. They're just nice people that have a lot of big hearts.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for sharing today, Erica. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for talking to me.